episode 41 of the Gerwick Report podcast. I am Steve Gerwick of Gerwick.net. I'm here with my longtime tag team partner, Frank D. And a number of issues discussed today, including what happened with the WWE Network and total number of subscribers. The WWE Financial Report is out for the second quarter. We'll talk about those numbers. Update on the TNA TV situation with Spike TV and get into the Vince Russo debacle that goes along with it. And we're going to get into what happened with Scott Hall and a fan, and a lot of issues to cover as usual. And let's say what's up to Frank D.
What's up, man? And I tell you, it's a very interesting Monday because one of the biggest things in the history of wrestling happened over the weekend, Steve.
What was that?
The Young Bucks finally shook hands with Booker T.
Oh, boy. Now I can sleep well at night.
Yeah. Yeah. Finally. They finally did it, man. So,
wow.
You know, we finally have, you know, it finally happened. So I'm very happy about that. And they should be WWE bound at this point.
I'm kind of surprised they have not been already. A very good tag team, of course, had some great matches with the Ring of Honor. And, of course, they were, what, in TNA for a brief time. Would you like to see the Young Bucks in WWE?
It couldn't hurt. I mean, the Usos need some new opponents since they're never going to bring...
True.
Since they're never going to bring up the Ascension, so.
Yeah, that's right. We were going to talk about, a couple podcasts ago, the Ascension maybe coming up to the main roster and getting a shot at the tag titles. What happened to that talk?
I don't know. I gotta ask Triple H later when we get done podcasting.
Yeah, well, he doesn't care what you think anyways.
No, so. You know, he doesn't care about me and my friend Mark, you know, so I don't know.
Well, of course, Thursday was the conference call, Vince McMahon. On the call, going over the financial numbers, WWE lost, $14.2 million in the quarter. As a result, 7% of the workforce was trimmed. We know 55 to 60 employees were let go. I saw a tweet from Smith Hart who said that they should have made a lot of cuts in WWE Creative Department, which would have been an improvement. But, of course, the number that a lot of people were clamoring to last week was the number for current subscribers to the WWE Network. We did find out at the end of June that WWE currently has 700,000 subscribers on the network, which for the period, they gained 161,000 and lost 128,000, which canceled the service. I think a lot of that was probably related to WrestleMania. People ordered the network to watch WrestleMania. And so the net gain was 33,000 subscribers from April 7th to June 30th. I know this number's been spun a lot, Frank. Is it a good number? Is it a bad number? And I remember the last podcast, I was hoping the number would be close to where they were at 667, the previously announced number, because I think they still need to make some changes with the network in terms of the content, adding different shows, working out issues with music, etc. So when you saw that number, Frank, what was your first reaction to learning that currently WWE has 700,000 domestic subscribers to the network?
I was pretty shocked, actually, by that number. I remember that morning I got a text from our good friend, the Jackal, and he asked me, you know, what I thought about it, and I said, dang, that was what I said, because I couldn't believe that they only had 700,000 subscribers. I actually kind of touted that I thought that the number would be about 850 is what I thought they would have gained. But I've been saying for months here on the podcast that I believe that they might have lost quite a bit of subscribers due to the fact of all the glitches and bugs that they had. And I kept saying that there was a way to get out of that six-month commitment, which WWE acknowledged that on their conference call, that if people didn't have money on their cards, they would count that as a lost subscriber. I was shocked, to say the least. I mean, with all the different content that they're offering on the network as far as the pay-per-views go, I thought that a lot of that segment of the wrestling viewing audience would have came over to the network, but it hasn't happened. And I think a lot of the reason why it hasn't happened is because the word of mouth is just not out there yet, as far as a lot of people might not know the WWE Network even exists. And you have to get those people that don't know on board. And I think with the launch that's coming up, I believe August 12th, they're going to be launching internationally, and they're going to be on a lot more different platforms as far as smart TVs, Blu-ray devices, etc. You might see a lot more people subscribing. But I do think in the long run, now that we know the WWE Network is going to be around for a long time, they're going to be making a lot more money in probably the next year with the network.
Yeah, remember you asking me, do you think WWE is going to stick with this network? And I think they realize the situation with television is changing dramatically. I think people are starting to get away a little bit with Netflix, Hulu, and some of the on-demand services of Amazon Prime, that you don't necessarily need to buy seasons of TV shows anymore, that you can watch a lot of the seasons on a subscription service. So I think they're tapping into that on-demand platform now, and I do think, as Frank has said here, I think it will be a success overall once they're fully launched in other markets and in international markets. They were really touting they're going international on August 12th. There's still some countries that will not have access to it as of August 12th that they're still working out. I believe like Japan and China are a couple of bigger countries that will not have access to the network as of August 12th. But I think one of the biggest announcements they made, Frank, was that they have signed an agreement with Rogers Cable in Canada, which will become a premium channel if you're a subscriber to Rogers Cable in Canada. You can now access the WWE Network on a pay channel. So I'm assuming that it's going to be a similar price tag for WWE programming on that network or that premium service. And as I understand it, Frank, this may be a kind of a beta test to test television in terms of what we're going to do is we're going to put the live stream on there. You can have access to the pay-per-views and anything we are currently showing live, and then maybe later they'll add the on-demand content. But I would think, Frank, if this is successful in Canada, then that would bode well for perhaps getting the WWE Network on in the United States, either on cable or satellite.
Right. And as far as the price point for how much the network will cost in Canada, rumor has this going to be around $11.99 a month for the pay channel on Rogers. And as Steve just said, it's going to basically be the live stream is what they're going to get. They'll get whatever is playing on the live stream. So say you'll get, if the schedule calls for an episode of the Clash of Champions, followed by WrestleMania 13, followed by ECW Hardcore TV, then that's what they will be seeing. They will get SummerSlam this year from Staples Center. So it's a big news. It kind of confirms where WWE is going with the network. A lot of people were kind of thinking the network would just fizzle out, but signing this 10-year deal with Rogers kind of shows you just how long the network is going to be around. And as you just said, they're using this as a beta program to see how it's going to work in Canada and if they can do it here in the United States as far as on the Time Warner, Charter, DirecTV, et cetera.
And I'm sure the cable companies, the Time Warners, the Cox Cables are going to pay attention to this, DirecTV, Dish Network, to say, hey, is it going to work? Are people going to plunk down $11.99 to watch WWE live stream, which would give you access, as you said, to the pay-per-views, will give you access to the NXT main event, etc., and then, of course, whatever specials they show on the stream at that time. I think it's a good way to go. And the one thing I would like about that over the current platforms that we have access to in terms of your Rokus and your Apple televisions and your PlayStations, your Xboxes, etc., that the reliability would be much higher watching it on cable. The one thing that a lot of people still have issues with is, watching a pay-per-view live stream on a Sunday night. They have issues on PlayStation. They have issues on Xbox. I've had issues on my Roku already. And I would think the reliability watching SummerSlam, for example, on Rogers Cable is going to be a lot higher than watching SummerSlam on PlayStation or Xbox or Apple TV.
Right, right. And that's going to be where this whole testing comes into play is, I believe it'll work perfect on the over-the-air TV as far as that goes, as opposed to working on one of these devices, which uses the streaming internet. And from what I understand, there is no internet capability right now in Canada for the network. So this might be another reason why they're going that direction with Rogers.
Now, another change that was announced was very interesting, is a change in the pricing. You'll continue to access WWE Network for the 6-month commitment, at $9.99 per month, which is basically 60 months for 6 months. But they also introduced a new pricing plan, Frank, in that you can subscribe. If you do not want a six-month commitment, you can subscribe for $19.99 per month. You can cancel at any time. You can watch it for a month, turn it off, and then come back in a couple of months. So what I was telling Frank was, you know, if you want to just access the big pay-per-views every year, if you want to access Royal Rumble, you can order it in January. You can order WrestleMania in April and order SummerSlam in August. And for your $60, you'd have access to the top three or the big three pay-per-view events per year. And then during that month, while you have it, you can check out what the current programming is or anything they've added. As you said to me this morning, they've added more episodes of Saturday Night's Main Event, which I believe all of them are now available on the network. So I kind of like this idea of, you know, pay one time $19.99 for the month. You can watch the pay-per-view. You can watch the content. And if you don't want to continuously pay your $10 per month, which would come out to $120 per year, that you basically watch what you want to watch and turn it off when you don't want to watch it.
Yeah, pretty much. And I'm pretty sure that the subscriber count is going to go up this month in August due to the fact of SummerSlam, and they're really touting the big main event between John Cena and Brock Lesnar for the WWE Championship. So I'm pretty sure the numbers are going to go up for this month. And I think a lot of people are going to probably take the new price plan into consideration, that they don't have to have, you know, people might have been on the fence or might have been a little afraid of doing that six-month commitment. They can now do it for $20 a month. And, you know, like you just said, watch it for 30 days and then come back in a couple months when, you know, the next show. The next big show after this one is probably going to be the Survivor Series. So we'll see how they beef it up. But, you know, you mentioned the three pay-per-views and the big four, which kind of shows you, you know, how people today perceive Survivor Series, which used to be the big, you know, one of the big four.
Yep, I kind of like this idea for $20 a month. And as you said, you can access it for a month. And if you're not happy with it, you're not committed to 6 months.
Yep.
You're not committed to the $9.99 per month. You know, people may try it for a month and say, it's just not for me.
Yep.
Which we're saying, I mean, we had 128,000 cancel their subscription during this period between April and June. As I said, Frank, I think a lot of people decided, hey, if I'm going to pay the $60 or $70, whatever WrestleMania, what the price tag was, I don't even know what it was on the traditional pay-per-view broadcast, but for $60, I could just get the network, I could try it out, and if I like it, I'll keep it. If not, I can exit out. And as you said, Frank, there must have been some loophole where they don't have to be committed to that 6 months. And I bet a lot of people were just paying $9.99, and decided, you know what, I just don't want this, and I probably got off cheaper paying for the network for a couple months than actually ordering the pay-per-view on cable or satellite.
Right. But, you know, if I were WWE, I would have found some type of legal way to maybe have a collections agency go after those people who got out of that six-month deal. Because anyway, when you sign up for that 6 months, that is a contract that you agreed to pay the $60. So if you got out of that early, if I were WWE, I would, you know, try to guard people as far as collections agencies, and that's what I would do if it was me.
But as we've said here on this podcast before, there are streaming issues, which is not part of your contract, right? And the whole initial launch of giving you uncut, uncensored, they haven't delivered on. So maybe they don't have a legal leg to stand on, because I don't know if they're delivering exactly what they said they'd be delivering on.
No, I don't think they are either, but I look into the fact that I, you, and a lot of other people are dealing with the same issues, but yet we have continued to pay for the service.
Well, on the flip side, though, I have not looked into opting out. I don't know if you've actually – I know you've been on – you've actually called the customer service department. I don't know if you – have you looked into possibility saying, I want out of my deal?
You know, I never have looked into – I mean, I've called them as far as the streaming issues go. But I've never looked into as far as canceling the deal, because I agreed to do it.
Right.
So that's just how I do things.
Exactly. So WWE has now a 10-year contract. So I guess Frank had any questions about WWE committed to this network. They now have a 10-year agreement with Rogers Cable in Canada to distribute the network to subscribers in Canada for that service. And I would think – you might see them work out deals with other cable partners internationally that people can access the network through traditional cable or satellite. Although I think part of going through this network the way they have is to get the on-demand service, to get people to watch it on their mobile devices, on their apps, through their phones and other platforms. And as you said, Frank, they're actually selling with the Roku devices now on the WWE Network. So they're at least expanding how you can watch the service, and I think it'll be interesting in the future if it is successful on Rogers, if fans would actually opt to watch the network on cable or satellite, or are people going to be happy, you know, streaming the service through PlayStation and Xboxes moving forward?
You know, I was very surprised when I saw WWE were selling these devices. They have the Roku 2 and the Roku 3. And they have the whole setup there. So I think kind of WWE kind of knew that maybe everybody doesn't have these devices, which they don't. You know, I look at the WWE's right. Facebook page, and there's a lot of people on there saying, oh, I don't have a way to watch this. I'm like, well, I actually said, hey, WWE is actually selling these devices. You might want to check it out. So I think that's it. You know, I mean, it kind of makes you wonder if now that WWE is selling these Roku devices, it kind of makes you wonder if they're actually going to start maybe selling smart TVs at some point, too.
Maybe. It wouldn't surprise me.
Maybe. You know, maybe there's a whole other different, you know, revenue that they can go with right there.
And, of course, let's analyze the number, because I think the reaction was some people thought it was a really good number, 700,000 subscribers, and some people thought they only gained 33,000 since WrestleMania. There's been free trials, et cetera.
Yeah.
Yeah, new content added. They had that free trial just recently where you got a preview of the Monday Night Wars show, which didn't even end up on the archive section. But there's kind of two camps of thought here, Frank. Is the number is not good because they only gained 33,000, and some other people say, hey, that's a pretty good number. I mean, compared to – I mean, you got to remember they've only been running since February – that if you could say compare it to, say, Hulu, and I know this is something that Atlee Green brought up on his podcast, the Body Slam podcast, which you can check out at girlwick.net, that, you know, say Hulu has 6 million subscribers, but Hulu offers movies, they offer TV shows, they offer kids shows, they offer your documentaries, they actually offer Raw, which I'm watching as we're doing this show right now, my condensed 90-minute version of the show. That, you know, say Hulu and Netflix and Amazon, they offer something for everybody, when the WWE Network doesn't offer something for everybody. It's really geared towards wrestling fans.
Right.
So perhaps a 700,000 number is not too bad at this point.
No, but see, here's the thing that WWE might want to consider doing. And this is just me. Maybe you could look into maybe adding other programming to the network as well. Why not add some of those WWE video, the home movies from the studios that they have? You know, those movies that they have from the WWE studios. Why not add some of those to the network? Why not actually go out there and buy other forms of entertainment, as far as, like, maybe buy sitcoms? And maybe you can, you know, have an arrangement where you can stream that kind of stuff on the network, too, so you can actually broaden your horizon. Oh, they have episodes here of this and that. Oh, wait a minute. They also have wrestling. You know, it's a different variety for everybody. Netflix offers movies, they offer sitcoms, and they also offer sports entertainment.
I wouldn't be surprised, Frank, if at some point they start adding the WWE films available on WWE Network. That could be what they got, the Marine and some of the other shows that they've See No Evil.
Right.
So at some point you may see them add the WWE Studios projects, especially those that go straight to DVD anyways. You just put it on the on-demand service.
Sure.
And that would broaden their horizon a little bit. You offer movies available on the network. I don't know about the idea of adding sitcoms and other programming. I mean, it is the WWE Network, so you think the WWE Network should be wrestling related.
Yeah, but WWE actually, you know, when you step out of that form of entertainment and you've gone into now you're making movies. Okay,
right.
And now you're you know, you have, you know, big movie projects like See No Evil 2 is coming out, and I heard that got pretty good reviews at Comic Con. You open the doors up to, you can do other things now. And they have the reality show Total Divas, they have Legends House. You know, they've had to toughen up in the past. So it wouldn't be out of the ordinary to think outside the box and say, okay, maybe WWE would pick up, you know, go out there and make some, you know, deals with some of these studios and get the rights to, we can air Roseanne, or we can air, you know, Family Matters or The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, or you can add WKRP in Cincinnati, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It wouldn't be out of the box to say that they would do that, because it's all about broadening the brand. You need to bring people in that normally wouldn't ordinarily watch sports entertainment and get them to order the network. Like I said before, Hulu does it, Netflix does it. They offer a variety for everything, but they're not garnered, you know, as far as one particular genre. You go on Netflix, you're going to see, you know, you're going to see comedies, you're going to see horror, you're going to see a lot of stuff. And, you know, on top of that, you have the cartoons for the kids. I mean, Netflix has its own kids section. So it's all about making the content available to the fans that, you know, are going to want to subscribe. And it, just because it's a WWE network, it doesn't have to necessarily be wrestling-related content. It can be anything.
Well, I tell you, Frank, I don't think they want to add WKRP, because those episodes of WKRP are all butchered already. All the, you talk about music issues with the WWE Network and taking out entrance musics. WKRP has, I think, only put one season out that was released on DVD, and it is so butchered with the music. The music playing in the studio with, like, Johnny Fever, and they dub it out and put other music. There's the famous scene with Les Nessman getting ready for a date, listening to Hot Blooded, and they dub that music out. I don't know, Frank, that might not be the show they want to go with right now.
Probably, well, yeah, from what you're telling me, probably not.
Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know. When I think WWE Network, there's just so much they still have yet to offer the wrestling fans out there. I mean, we've said this so many times on this podcast that, you know, say, like, Saturday Night's Main Event. Okay, now they have it on the network. Where's the AWA? Where is the Nitros? And I guess you're telling me that they're getting close to adding the Nitros now. But I don't even think they've tapped into their own category fully yet. There are so many things I'd like to see on the WWE Network that is not currently offered, the nostalgia factor. I was telling you that I'd love to see the Great American Bashes from the 80s, the stadium shows, not the one-night pay-per-views they would do, Great American Bash. I'm talking about the series of shows they would do during the summer, where they'd run big stadium shows and Ric Flair would defend the title on every night against different opponents, and he had Road Warrior Animal, Road Warrior Hawk, well, Ricky Morton, Robert Gibson getting title shots, etc. That's the kind of things I'd like to see before we would, you know, maybe tap into other forms of entertainment. I still think they need to deliver really what they're sitting on. There's so many hours of entertainment that they're sitting on that wrestling fans, nostalgic wrestling fans, want to see, that it seems like these shows should already be there. And at the very minimum, we should be hearing more about these shows are going to be added. Now, you tell me, you know, possibly Nitro being added, and we know this fall they're going to go with the Monday Night Wars, but there's just so much they're sitting on, Frank, that they've yet to give us.
Yeah, the thing, too, is that, you know, I hear so much about, like, you know, like we said before, I hear so much about Super Clash, AWA Super Clash, and you hear so much about the Texas Stadium shows with the WCCW. WWE needs to put this content on there, because the biggest asset the company has is the video library, yeah. The extensive, you know, video library WWE owns, WWE owns pretty much the majority of all wrestling that's on film. They own it all. So why not go ahead and put this content available to the fans? And once again, the subscribers can get this stuff and actually subscribe to the network. And it won't be a one-month deal. It could be a six-month deal, as long as you keep adding fresh content. You cannot have what they have right now, in which ECW, WCCW, old school, and a lot of these other sections on the network have not been updated. I'm talking about 3 or 4 months now that they haven't been updated. But they just stopped updating these sections. You cannot do that. You're running content here. You would never see if Netflix has different shows on there, and they're always constantly updating with new content. So you need to do the same thing.
You know, the one criticism I have of Netflix, Hulu, and some of the other services, though, is that they occasionally delete things off their service as well. So I would think that with WWE Network, and they own the footage, it's their footage. As you said, they pretty much own wrestling. And a lot of people think eventually they're going to own the TNA library, and that'll be a part of their network subscription. They own all this footage. That how is it not there already? Where is WCW Saturday Night, the 605 shows? I mean, these are just core shows that should be. When I think of WWE Network, and just think about all the things they're sitting on, you know, primetime wrestling, the WWE superstars of the 80s with Vince and Jesse, Wrestling Challenge, the Bobby Heenan Show, Fuji Vice, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm just kind of mind boggled that at this point, that majority of what I've just said is not on the network in some form. And I am excited about the Monday Night Wars. I think that's going to be a good series. And I'm happy they got Saturday Night's Main Event on there. But as we said before, they've cut out the music now. The traditional Animotion music is gone. And it's even some of the stuff they are delivering on, Frank, the nostalgia is gone. And I think that's really hurt them with tapping into wrestling fans. The older wrestling fans that are alienated from the current product, is they're still not delivering on what we thought they would deliver on.
Yeah, and they've had months, you know, since February to correct this, and they have failed to do it. I mean, you've even had Hulk Hogan come out there and tell you what's on the network, and it just doesn't matter. You need to get those.
And I'm still mind-boggled by this 90% survey, Frank.
Yeah, I mean,
I heard them tell that on a conference call, that they 90% of the people surveyed are, what, happy or pretty happy with the network overall?
Right.
Who are they asking?
Probably.
Who are they surveying?
Probably their own employees.
It must be.
Except,
and they can't be too happy now, because now you have 55 employees gone.
Exactly.
So, including the WWE magazines now going to be essentially closed down. Are you sad about that?
No.
No, I'm not either.
The magazine sucks. It sucks for years. You know, it's really after WCW folded and ECW folded, the popularity of magazines in the United States went into crapper. It's not surprising to me that the WWE magazine also went down. I mean, WWE they were producing the WWE magazine, and if you remember, it became the WWE Raw magazine. And then they had a SmackDown magazine. They had the WWE Kids magazine. So these magazines suck. Nobody's reading these magazines. Who cares? I'm not going to spend, you know, whatever it was. I think it was maybe $7, $8 an issue to read a kayfabe book.
Right. You know, when I used to subscribe to the WWE magazine in the 80s, when I believe it was monthly, and then it would come, and you'd have these really nice glossy pictures of... I remember, in the 80s, this is before the internet.
Right.
This is before the dirt sheet, other than Observer. Observer and the Torch were around, but that was really the only sources of inside information. You had the Pro Wrestling Illustrated, which I remember towards the later part of the 80s, they'd have an insider section at the very back where they'd give you some kind of late-breaking information. You had The Wrestler and some of the other Stu Sachs publications at that time. That was the way to get pictures, learn stories about wrestlers. This is before the internet really boomed, and get some inside information. Although mostly those magazines were kayfabe. They were talking about the storylines as if they were really happening. But, you know, I kind of missed that day, because I remember, you know, getting the WWE magazine in the mail and looking forward to reading it and learning more about the WWE superstars and getting the Pro Wrestling Illustrated magazines and getting their rankings of top tens of federations. I don't have access to see the world-class federation, the Puerto Rico promotions, the Mexican promotions. They would rank them all. And a lot of them were, you know, kayfabe-type rankings, not really based on anything other than some editor sitting in a room and deciding to rank him for a week. But it was something to look forward to. But as you said, Frank, those days have long passed us by.
Yeah, it really has. And like I said, I'm not going to spend $8 an issue for kayfabe magazine about kayfabe wrestling. It ain't going to happen. They changed that. That was all changed when WWE decided to pull the curtain back and show you what's really going on. So there is no going back to kayfabe. And it's kind of funny because they've exposed the business so much, and all of a sudden now it's all about the kids.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, so that's just why I have a problem with that. That's just, I mean, it's so ridiculous.
And if you missed the conference call with Vince McMahon, it is archived at Gerwick.net. The one thing I remember them saying, Frank, is I think they overall were pretty happy with the number for the subscriptions. And I believe they said they'd be happy with like 1 million subscribers by the year's end. And to me, expanding into these foreign markets now, if they don't have a million subscribers by the end of the year, I would be concerned.
Yeah, you know, I think WWE's mentality is that they're going to get those subscribers internationally. So I don't really think they're concerned about it. They have already said that all they need is 500,000 to break even with the network. That's you know, a little bit better than what they were originally saying. They needed 2 million to break even. So they're saying 500,000, including the cuts they've done lately. So, I mean, you have to give them to consideration that WWE knows what they're doing.
By their own numbers, they're already profitable.
By their own numbers, they're already profitable, yeah. I mean, that's what George Berrios was saying.
I mean, that's a massive cut to go from, what, 2 million to be profitable now to 500,000?
All right.
Those are some major cuts.
Yeah.
I don't know if I totally buy that number.
I don't know. I mean, but, you know, here's the deal. WWE saying one number, then saying the other one. It's kind of like they were saying in the beginning when they were talking about what they were going to get for their TV deal, and it didn't happen. So, same kind of deal.
The thing with WWE is they're a publicly traded company. So they can't totally work all the numbers. You know, certainly they spin the numbers to their advantage, as good PR as you would do. But I don't know if I still buy 500,000 to go from 2 million all the way down to 500,000 to be profitable. I mean, that's some huge cuts. I know they got rid of the program director, and they certainly have cut payroll here, and they've cut payroll with the network as well. But that's some huge cuts to get out of 500,000. If they pulled that off, that's pretty good business.
Yeah.
So, in fact, I think TNA could learn from that.
TNA can learn from anybody at this point.
The issues are still there, and maybe we'll get Frank's opinion on this here, because I just got a notice in my email box. I think you did too in your inbox that our subscription is going to be coming to an end here. I didn't get a specific date, but I believe with the 24th they launched, and they were offering everybody, what, 7 days initially, so that takes you into like the first week of March. So your six-month commitment will be up in September, early September, and I think they want you to go into your account and probably put the automatic renewal so that you don't miss out on anything. We've talked about this a lot, Frank, on, you know, with the network and the content issues and the edits and everything. When September comes around, is Frank D going to renew his subscription to the WWE Network?
You know, we were just talking about this before we started recording here. I honestly don't know. I'm on the fence, man. I'm on the fence with it because I'm not seeing all the content that I want yet. You've added a couple of, you know, you completed the Saturday Night's Main Events. But what else do you have? Where is Superstars of Wrestling? Where is Wrestling Challenge? Like I said, where's WWE Worldwide? Where's Saturday Night? Where's Sunday Night Heat? Shotgun Saturday Night, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know, man. I'm kind of on the fence. I really don't know. WWE is going to really have to really, you know, put some kind of incentive and really put some initiative and add this content. I mean, as we said before, they've had free trial. They even had $25 gift cards if you had signed up for the network, if you got somebody to sign up for the network. So they've done everything they can. You know, it's up to now. It's like, okay, why are we failing? Because you guys don't have anything on the network besides pay-per-views that people want to see. You're not giving people the content they want.
I guess maybe the final question would be on the network is, you know, we talked about Superstars isn't there from the 80s, Wrestling Challenge, WCW Saturday Night, WCW Worldwide, etc., the Main Event, Live Wire, some of these shows that we've talked about, you know, doing this podcast. And I get the impression, Frank, that some of these shows are just not priorities. I mean, some of these shows we've not heard a word about. Say, Livewire. Have you heard him even mention Livewire as a possibility they'd add? The Bobby Heenan show. I'd hope they'd add primetime wrestling. But at the end of the day, Frank, do you think we're going to see some of these shows that we're talking about? I mean, certainly we're going to see Nitro, and I think we'll see Thunder. We're going to see, obviously, most of the Raw library and SmackDown, etc. But in the future, are we going to see the Superstars of the 80s? Are we going to see Wrestling Challenge? Are we going to see Wrestling Spotlight with Gene Oakland? Are we going to see Primetime Wrestling, Tuesday Night Titans, WCW Saturday Night, etc.? Or you just think it's such a low priority, we may not end up seeing some of these shows?
I think that eventually we're going to see them because I remember how much we saw. You know, I never actually had it, but I remember just how they had it. Years ago on the Classics On Demand when they had a lot of different content on there. Eventually, I think we're going to see it. But they just need to beef it up a little bit more. You know, they need to really start showing off that impressive library of, I believe, maybe, it don't quote me this, but I think their library might be at about 100,000 hours right now of content. So we need to really start putting that stuff out there that people want to see. And I think eventually they're going to get to it. I don't think it's a priority right this second, but I think that eventually they're going to have to start showing it.
And maybe they like this mentality as well as, you know, we got a lot of shows up there, but Frank, we got so many shows in the vault, we continuously expand our library of on-demand content. So for months and months and months in the future, we can keep saying we're constantly adding programming, which
sure.
looks good for the network to say, hey, this month we're adding this, and this next month we're going to add this, and then next month we're going to add some of this. Maybe we'll see some Madison Square Garden shows from the archives. Maybe we'll show some Maple Leaf Garden shows, some house shows from the 80s and 90s.
Sure.
So it looks good to say, hey, yeah, we got a lot of content currently on there, but we're constantly adding to our library as well.
Sure.
We're going to constantly add more shows. You're not going to get tired of watching the same stuff. You're going to see the shows that were staple shows back when, you know, we were growing up watching some of these wrestling shows. I mean, AWA from, what, ESPN, the AWA, the ESPN shows. Some of the ECW shows maybe from the TNN days.
Right.
I don't believe they have on there yet, right? They've not added those.
They have not added them, no.
So perhaps as we continue on and they continue to expand the video content on their on-demand service, we will eventually see some of these shows that we want to see. Although some of the ECW on TNN were kind of the watered-down ECW to a certain extent because they certainly couldn't do everything they wanted to do on TNN at that time. They had to be a little more toned down, but I still like to go back and watch some of those old shows.
I would too. And speaking of TNA, that's a perfect segue into going into talking about TNA, because TNN used to be the Nashville Network, then they were the National Network, and then they became Spike.
Right.
So perfect segue to talk about TNA's lack of a television deal because of one Vince Russo, Vinny Roo. Steve, you know, before we started recording this morning, Vince Russo sent out a statement talking about TNA and talking about his employment or lack thereof. And do you want to let the listeners out there know exactly what we're talking about?
Yeah, there's been a lot of stories going around that what hurt TNA status with Spike TV is that they went behind Spike TV officials and rehired Vince Russo. I guess Spike TV has made it clear that they didn't want Vince Russo a part of TNA since they are partners with Impact Wrestling. Vince Russo, let me start off by saying with Vince Russo, it's basically come out that what kind of spoiled the deal, him being a kind of a secret consultant for TNA, and I can't believe we're talking about Vince Russo kind of working behind the scenes from everybody, including Spike TV, but Vince Russo is working behind the scenes. He sends out an email, a TNA employee email, you know, going out to Bob Ryder and Jeremy Borash and Mike Tenay, et cetera, about the direction of the product, of the TV show. And in doing so, he carbon copies Mike Johnson of PW Insider, and that Mike Johnson gets a copy of an email that was clearly, you know, meant for TNA employees, which reveals, it's been speculated for a while, that Vince Russo is indeed an employee of TNA Wrestling. So Mike Johnson just basically says, hey, you know, I could publicize this email if you don't reveal that you are part of TNA once again. We do now know that Spike TV was not happy with Vince Russo working for TNA without them knowing about it. And I think justifiably so, Frank, they're not happy with Vince Russo. I don't know who would be at this point. And especially 2014, we're still talking about Vince Russo.
Right.
But essentially, Vince Russo replied to the story about Mike Johnson. And what he said in a tweet is he insinuated that PW Insider is spying on his phone. He put out a tweet saying, interesting. This is a direct quote from Vince Russo. Interesting. Appears a rep from Phony Wrestling Information, or PWI, tapped my phone yesterday to hear if I quit or got fired. Sneaky bastards. So to start, before we get into the statement, Frank, Vince Russo puts out a tweet that he feels that another wrestling website, is spying on him, is tapping into his phone lines to hear what he's talking about. Already, Frank, I would think it. We know this is not the case, that at the very minimum, PW Insider may want to call their attorneys, because this is definitely defamation of their website.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I don't know what the email consisted of that Russo sent out, but, you know, as we were saying before, hey, Russo could have been feeding, you know, PW Insider information for years.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why I'm sure that's the reason Mike Johnson was in his email list.
Yep.
He sends out this information to Mike Johnson, and Mike Johnson, you know, regurgitates it in his forum on PW Insider. But to insinuate in a public forum on Twitter that he feels that PW Insider is tapped into his phone lines, I mean, that shows you really the kind of character Vince Russo is. That he's trying to justify what he did in error, that he thinks all of a sudden that PW Insider is now listening to his conversations. I mean, this is a little background before we get into the statement, but now he releases a statement about what really happened with TNA and the Spike TV situation. Essentially, he was rehired by TNA October 24th, 2013, and he was basically told that it had to be quiet, it had to be hush-hush, they couldn't really talk about it, that he was basically a secret employee for TNA, and that it couldn't get back to Spike TV. Well, he is saying now that an employee of TNA told him in January or February that they told Spike TV TV representative Scott Fishman that he was indeed an employee of TNA working as a consultant. He was told that Scott Fishman was, quote-unquote, was cool with the whole situation, that he is, again, an employee of TNA Wrestling. So, basically, to sum it up, Vince Russo is throwing this TNA employee under the bus to say, hey, they knew about it. Spike TV knew that I was back with TNA in January, February, and that it's not my fault that they essentially blew the television deal because TNA lied to Spike TV that Vince Russo was once again an employee of TNA Wrestling. So in the statement, Frank, he's putting all the blame on TNA and really essentially he's taking no blame other than saying that he shouldn't have took this job under these circumstances where he had basically, you know, worked behind the scenes and not tell anybody that he was back with the company. Today on August the 4th, 2014, Vince Russo is saying that Spike TV was aware of his employment in January, February. What do you make of the statement today?
I think that it's pretty much trying to save some type of face. That's what it is. I mean, the guy was ridiculed all last week for his involvement in the, you know, possible demise of TNA. So this guy is trying to save as much face as he can. Everybody's turned on Russo. I saw Taz had tweeted on Twitter where he was telling Russo to go away. So there's a lot of people that don't like Russo. So Russo is just touching their straws right now. You know, he's just really just trying to find some way to make himself look good in this situation.
Exactly. And again, you have to remember, this is the guy, as I said before, that is blaming PW Insiders, or claiming that PW Insider is basically spying on his telephone line. So this shows you the kind of guy that Vince Russo is. And it just boggles my mind, Frank, that TNA went to such depths to keep his employment a secret from their television partner when they knew their television partner didn't want anything to do with Vince Russo. This just shows you the mind-boggling management of TNA Wrestling.
Yeah, I don't understand how in 2014, you know, this guy is still relevant and you can still be, after this guy has never really drawn you an audience and he helped put WCW under, why are you still depend on this guy? So they still get it.
And then I did see a tweet from Smith Hart, who, you know, going back to, as I said, going back to the situation with WWE, said if you're cutting employees, you should just cut out the WWE creative department since they really have no ideas what to do with the product right now. But he also took a shot at Russo and claimed in a tweet that Vince Russo is responsible for Owen Hart's death, and that he basically challenged Vince Russo to a match in TNA. And I guess what it comes down to is he holds Vince Russo responsible for WWE going back to Owen Hart, reverting back to the Blue Blazer, and that the night that he died, it was Vince Russo's idea to drop him from the rafters. So essentially, I guess Smith Hart is holding Vince Russo responsible for Owen Hart's death.
Yeah, and it's kind of, you know, it's kind of convenient right now because, see, Smith Hart has put out many, many, many tweets and many, many different things that he's put out over on the net. You post a lot of them, but all of a sudden now you want to put up here that you think Russo, you know, is responsible for Owen's death. So I don't know if it's true or it's not true. I just say it's convenient timing.
I don't – well, I guess we'll never know the situation. We know Owen Hart – I guess we've heard over the years, Frank, that he was basically punished for not wanting to do a storyline with Deborah, implying that he was, you know, messing around with Deborah because Owen Hart was a family man, and he didn't want his kids to see that he, you know, Daddy was fooling around with this other girl, and that he was essentially punished to go back to the Blue Blazer gimmick. And I don't know if that was Vince Russo's idea. I think you still have to blame Vince. I mean, at the end of the day, remember we said that everything was filtered through Vince McMahon. And it was obviously Vince's call to revert Owen Hart back to the Blue Blazer. So even though if you think it was Vince Russo's idea for doing the Blue Blazer gimmick, at the end of the day, Frank, it's still on Vince McMahon's hands because he made the call for Owen Hart to go back to Blue Blazer.
Very true. Very true. I the only thing I can say is that when this situation happened with Owen falling to his death, had the stunt been practiced earlier by Vince McMahon, I don't know the answer to that question. All I know is that, you know, I remember hearing what the original plan was supposed to be. It was supposed to be Owen getting lowered to the ring and then tripping over the rope to make fun of Sting at the time. So I think that it's just so ignorant to this day to have pulled something off like that. And my thing, if Owen, you know, was afraid or something, Owen should have said something. I mean, the worst thing that could happen was they would have fired him, and he probably went off to WCW.
You know, obviously the Hart family sued Vince McMahon and WWE for a wrongful death suit, which they won millions of dollars for. So essentially they held Vince McMahon responsible for that death, or the company responsible for the death. And remember, years back, WWE was actually tinkering with the idea of bringing Vince Russo back in the fold. So I don't think WWE holds Vince Russo responsible for Owen's death. I don't know if this was what, before he went, was one of the stints after TNA that they were actually talking about bringing Vince Russo back to WWE?
I believe it was. And it also could have been a part where they were going to bring Russo back to, you know, a lot of DVD releases. You know, put him on there to have him talk about different things that happened in the business. But, you know, I don't know, man. You know, the only thing I can say about the Owen Hart situation with Russo is it's unfortunate that it happened. You know, we can go back in time and it wouldn't happen, it wouldn't have happened. And, you know, I think that for a guy like Vince Russo, who, you know, to be honest with you, outside of the stuff he did in WWE with the Attitude Era, never really had that much success outside of WWE. Never had really much success in WCW and did not have any success, in my opinion, in TNA. So while, like I said before, TNA to put this guy on such a high regard, for Dixie to risk the company for this guy is just beyond me. It's just mind-boggling to me, the decisions that this company makes in the 12 years it's been around.
Yeah, after we did the last podcast, and of course we spent a lot of time on the previous podcast, episode 40, of the Gerwek Report podcast, which you can check out at www.gerwek.net in the audio section. We were really talking that it was basically the death of TNA. We didn't think they'd get a television deal from, you know, moving forward because all the other networks have their lineup in place for the fall. And then shortly after we did that podcast, you know, Dixie Carter put out a tweet that they are currently in negotiations with Spike TV. They're ongoing. Not all the reports are accurate of what's really going on with the TV situation. I know Bob Ryder, who works in the travel department with TNA, put out a tweet as well saying that there's misinformation on the internet right now, that they are in negotiations. Well, Frank, that's been a week since that's happened, and we've heard nothing updated in terms of the television situation. It doesn't look like Spike is going to retain. And some people have implied that maybe Spike told Dixie that they're not going to renew the contract as a negotiating ploy to say, okay, maybe we'll take you back, but we're not going to pay you what we've been paying you in the previous years. That you can still stay with the network, but we're going to give you a lot less for your contract this year. Either way, Frank, it doesn't look good for Spike TV maintaining a relationship with TNA. Looks like they're more into Bellator these days, and I would be very, very surprised to hear a reversal that Spike TV is going to retain Impact Wrestling.
Only time is going to tell. I mean, I think that if they were going to retain him, we would have heard something by now. But
yeah,
they could still be at the negotiating table. I don't know. You know, I don't work at Spike. You know, if I knew, I probably would tell you. but I don't know for sure what's going on with that. It's been very quiet outside of Dixie tweeting about Impact. Nothing has been tweeted about the ongoing negotiations.
And there's definitely been kind of a spin out there from the TNA perspective of saying that they kind of walked away from Spike TV. That they, maybe were insulted by the offer and that they were going to walk away. Well, unfortunately, Frank, we know where wrestling is in 2014. There's no other networks clamoring for Impact Wrestling. We don't see any networks really clamoring for Global Force Wrestling, which is a new group. And I think it's all PR. I think it's a spin right now to say, I don't know if they're actively negotiating or not. I can't tell you. I highly doubt it. I think it was all a spin move by Dixie Carter and TNA, because obviously that Monday, it was a Black Monday. I mean, it looked like it was the end of the company. So to save face, they say, hey, either we're walking away or we're still negotiating. Either way, Frank, if they're negotiating, it's negotiating for a lower price. And I know Atlee Green and Todd Graham got into this on the Body Slam podcast. Is essentially, Frank, it may be best for the TNA company just to cease existence, because if they stay with Spike and they have to take less money, what's going to result is more talent's going to get cut, probably more production's going to get cut, travel's going to get cut down, etc. They're going to cut more with their budget. They've already cut a lot of expenses from their account as well. Or if they get another television deal somewhere else, they're going to get a lot less money from Spike. They're not going to get the same amount of money they're getting from Spike currently. And Spike, as we've said on this podcast, Frank, Spike has bent over backward for this company. They've helped subsidize Kurt Angle's contract. They helped subsidize Hulk Hogan's contract. They've paid for production. They put them on primetime slots on Monday night, Thursday night, moved them all around. They've accommodated TNA to the nth degree. They're not going to get that from another television partner. So, moving forward, it would be sad for TNA to go out of business from a talent perspective. I mean, Frank, you said it's the dead brand. I just don't think there's going to be any life left in TNA. They've been mismanaged for how many years now? Dixie Carter is still the boss because Bob Carter owns the company. And, really, aside from them being sold to another television company that could implement new leadership, I mean, TNA is going nowhere, Frank, and it's stuck in the mud, and I just know it's never going to be profitable. When we're hearing reports now that they've lost, $45 million over the last 3 years? I mean, Frank, at some point, it's just time to pull the plug.
At some point, you pull the plug, but if they do pull the plug, there's going to be lots of negative repercussions because of that. A lot of talent is not going to be able to find any work on the indies because, let's face it, a lot of people just don't watch TNA.
Nope.
I mean, it's not like you're AJ Styles or somebody. You're not. And right now the roster is so weak, it'll be a bad thing. I would hate to see TNA close its doors. I would hope that somebody else could buy it.
And then the other situation is, of course, it would be their video library. We were hearing reports on approximately how much WWE would pay for an hour of programming. And somebody did the math, and it would be about $500,000 to buy the TNA video library. I guess maybe somewhere down the line that would be, a new feature is you can watch the TNA programming on the WWE Network. I think it would be a welcome addition to their library because they have some great wrestling matches, going back to the the TNA pay-per-views on Wednesday nights, the Impacts from Fox Sports Net, when they would run, Friday afternoons and have the X Division feature prominently. So I don't know, Frank. I just don't see – I think Bob Carter's attempt to sell TNA Wrestling to Toby Keith was kind of a last-ditch effort. There's been reports that possibly Spike TV would be interested in buying the company. I mean, that boggles my brain. I mean, what possible reason would Spike TV want to buy a company that's bleeding money that you've invested millions of dollars in with production, contracts, etc.? I mean, why would Spike TV want to buy Impact Wrestling at this point? I just think they're dead, Frank. I think you said it before, dead brand, and I just think there's no future for Impact Wrestling. If they land a new deal, they're going to take a lot less money, and they're going to operate a lot smaller. Maybe it's best if they just move on at this point. I just can't imagine the Carters want to continuously lose this amount of money every year. And I know they probably are worth billions of dollars, the Carter family, but, you know, at some point, Frank, you just have to say, hey, Dixie, you know, we gave it a chance, but it's just not working. Let's just move on.
Right. I mean, let's see. Let's look at it. You went from Wednesday night pay-per-views to Fox Sports Net to Impact being at 11 on Spike on Saturday nights. So they give you a prime time spot, and then they give you Monday nights, and then back to Spike on Thursdays. What more can they do to help you get your brand over?
Spike, exactly. So
Spike TV is probably going to cut their losses and say, okay, well, WWE, do you want to buy the video vault? And we'll fold the company.
And the sad thing is, as it was always a part of the landscape, is a network can show cheaper programming, such as Cops, and make as much money, if not more money, in television ad revenue than airing an episode of Impact Wrestling.
Very true.
So why continuously dump money in a project that is showing no signs of life, that you've emptied out the roster, that you draw flies at stadium shows? So that report, and again, maybe it's coming from TNA to imply that Spike TV may be interested in buying TNA Wrestling, but makes no sense.
No. Well,
Spike TV does not want Impact Wrestling.
Well, why would Spike want to buy an entity that's owing $40 million?
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
And they know. I mean, they've invested how much money in this company?
A lot. Too much.
A lot. They just want to continuously dump money into a black hole?
Right.
I mean, Bob Carter's already done that. I mean, Bob Carter took the purse strings away from Dixie and gave it to his wife, Janice.
Yeah.
And that still isn't working. And they still lost $45 million, say, over 3 years. That was one of the numbers I've seen. I don't know if that's accurate, but certainly they're losing money. And, you know, as I said on the previous podcast, I never bought into them actually making money. I don't believe for a second this company ever turned a profit. We know they lost money, $20 million, reports of, like, say, 2005. Now we're seeing reports they've lost $40 million over the last several years. I mean, one thing left is the middle years, you know, between 2005 and, what, 2011,
sure.
Essentially. And at that time, they still had no pay-per-view business. They didn't draw flies at house shows then. Nobody ever bought their merchandise. Their DVDs don't sell. Their T-shirts don't sell. Frank, I think they've essentially lost. The Carter family's been losing millions of dollars since day one.
Yep.
And they continue to bleed money. So there is no future for Impact. So, you know, Atlee Green said it. Maybe it's just best for the company to fold. And maybe somebody starts a new company. I mean, you got Jeff Jarrett talking about launching Global Force Wrestling. You know, join the force. I mean, I hate to see TNA go for the talent, but, Frank, there's just no future in TNA Wrestling. It's a dead brand.
Yeah, it is a dead brand. And it sucks, but it's the truth. It's a very dead brand. It's like I've always said on the podcast, it's just that certain stigmatism you have with being associated with TNA, being associated with a dead brand. This is the reason why WWE doesn't want anything to do with any of those guys.
It's why eventually Vince is going to swoop in and buy all the logos and all the copyrights and the video library for nickels on the dollar.
Yep.
As he did WCW. He bought it for, what, $4 or $5 million?
I think the last word I got was maybe two.
$2 million for the video library, the logos, the trademarks, everything. He owns everything with WCW.
Yep.
A company that was making millions and millions, tens of millions of dollars, he bought for $2 million.
Yep.
Wow.
So they had to get rid of it.
and he's going to end up, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, TNA has never turned a profit, but he's still going to end up with that video. The video library is still worth something.
Yep.
There are really good wrestling shows. I mean, as much as we've ragged on TNA, we give the company, I mean, back in the day, Frank, they produced some really good pay-per-views. They produced some really good Impact shows.
Oh, it was rave reviews.
Yeah. I mean, there is a market for the footage they're sitting on. As you said before, you know, TNA's been too lazy with the on-demand section or service. You know, they could make some money off their on-demand section, but then again, the way they marketed things, I guess they wouldn't.
No, WWE would make a killing with it. Because you'll have those TNA fans out there that will want to watch TNA, and we're just saying it's hypothetically if the company were to fold. You have those fans out there that want to see TNA, that are craving for that TNA content. Oh, WWE has it. Oh, coming out on WWE Home Video presents the best of the X Division. It's like they've done the best of the ladder matches, etc. WWE would know what to do exactly with the video library if somebody actually puts the content out there.
And as we said before, Frank, if TNA has a problem with anything we've said about the company, give us somebody to talk to. Give us Dixie Carter. If Dixie Carter wants to come on this show, on this podcast, and address all these issues that we've talked about, come on the podcast.
Yeah, I've called Dixie Carter out, you know, plenty of times. I've called her out. I even said she can bring, you know, Jeremy Borash. She can bring anybody up here she wants to defend the brand. It's up to them. They want to come out here. Right now, you need to come out here and say something to these fans. You need to let your fans know exactly what's going on, because I might not have a vested interest in what happens to your program or what happens to your product, but a lot of your hardcore fans do.
And your employees do.
Yep.
You know, the only time I've ever really heard Dixie Carter, there was a conference call. Well, they asked her about the accuracy of, say, Dave Meltzer putting out a number for a TNA pay-per-view, and she says those numbers are not exactly accurate. Well, what is exactly accurate? And them being a private company instead of a public company, they don't have to put those numbers out. But you don't really see them really refuting a bunch of inaccuracies in their minds, because they don't have to. They're, as I said, they're a private company, but they've essentially said that those numbers aren't accurate. Well, what are the numbers?
Right.
If those numbers aren't accurate, how come you're dropping pay-per-views? You only got a few How come you're running your biggest pay-per-view in Japan this year?
Sure.
Your WrestleMania. I don't see Vince McMahon running WrestleMania in the UK or in Japan. These issues have to be addressed, and of course they won't be, because they don't do it that way in TNA. And we've talked about their public relations department has been a nightmare for years. And Dixie Carter herself has criticized fans on Twitter. So that's just the way they operate.
But really quick though, it's no different. You know, we come out here and rag about, you know, the way TNA people have been as far as the Bubba Rays and MVPs and all these people that have come out and ragged on the fans for whatever reason. You know, but WWE, you know, Triple H, you know, we just weren't going to say Triple H doesn't do things like that, but he did it last week. He did.
Yep.
He called, you know, or the week before, he called people, you know, came out and called the people marks and everything like that. It's been told that Triple H doesn't really care for the internet very much. He just, you know, it's a social media agenda. I think that Stephanie really loves it, and this is the reason why they do it. But he doesn't really like that too much.
And he doesn't really care what you think. I mean, Vince has already said it over the years. He knows what you want more than what you know what you want.
And I go back to Triple H. Is that Triple H's better days are behind him. And it shows obviously now. I mean, here's the guy we'll just be known for. The reason where he's at, right or wrong, is because of who he's married to.
Exactly. Let's talk about the Scott Hall situation. This is something that really, really frustrates me to no degree, because over the years, Frank, we've supported Scott Hall. We've talked glowingly about Scott Hall. We're both fans of his wrestling career. We were both very happy to see Scott Hall get sober enough to accept his Hall of Fame accolades at this year's Hall of Fame ceremony. We've certainly supported his WWF career, AWA, WCW, WWE, etc. Years ago, Scott Hall asked for money for an operation that he had. Yet, just recently, he was asked to sign a card for a terminally ill child with cancer. And other WWE superstars, legends, signed the card. And yet Scott Hall basically refused to sign this card. And I went on Twitter and I sent a direct tweet to Scott with a link to the story to say, hey, if this is true, shame on you. And my thought is, if it's not true, then Scott Hall should make a public statement or a comment or reply to it and say, hey, the reports are inaccurate. I didn't do this. I don't know what you're talking about, et cetera, et cetera. He didn't reply to the tweet. I've seen other journalists send tweets to other legends asking if this story is true or not. I don't believe, to my knowledge, anyone has acknowledged it not being true, including somebody like Kevin Nash has not said anything about it. Frank, this looks really bad on Scott Hall, and I know people will say, you know, he's the bad guy and this is his gimmick, etc., but Frank, there is no excuse for this. This is a guy that has made millions of dollars, that has squandered millions of dollars on a career that has brought him fame, fortune, women, etc. We know the lifestyle. And at the end of the day, when it's called upon for Scott Hall to give back just a little bit, all you got to do is take a pen and put your name on a card that would mean so much to a terminally ill child, Scott Hall does not do it. He no-shows.
Yeah, that's just terrible. If you're considering the big deal WWE did for Connor after he passed, it showed that touching tribute video and of him pinning Triple H in the ring, and you know, they have a foundation in his name now. For Scott Hall to be that low and not sign the card, just a card, man. You can take, you know, 2 minutes to sign a card. You know, it just really sucks. It really shows you the type of person he is, especially when he had a GoFundMe, rebuild the bad guy. He was talking about the bionic bad guy. And it's just really just low class and ignorant. I can't believe that out of all the blessings that Scott Hall has gotten the past year and a half, he couldn't, you know, bless somebody else by just signing his autograph. This really shows you what kind of a piece of crap Scott Hall really is. And I never thought I would say that about Hall because I'm a big Scott Hall fan, but I'll call it, just like I'll call Raven, a piece of garbage too.
Just a lowlife. Like you said, take 1 minute out of your day to sign a card that would mean so much to somebody, and that you can't do that for your fans. That's just unforgivable. And I can't believe, and I've seen it out there, Frank, where people have justified or given him the benefit of the doubt. As I said, I put in a public forum on Twitter, put a link to the story, and basically I thought, if it's not true, then refute it. And nobody's refuted this story, which basically implies it's true, that Scott Hall didn't have the time to sign a card for a terminally ill child. And that's just utterly pathetic.
Yep.
And I've lost a lot of respect for Scott Hall today. A lot of respect.
Yeah, I lost a lot of respect for the guy a long time ago after I heard that he was, you know, once again having issues after people have invested money in him and he's at the WWE Hall of Fame ring and all the stuff that this guy, and you still go back to doing the same behaviors. You know, I'll tell you, you know, one guy that I have a ton of respect for, a guy that is not out there doing super stuff but actually doing positive things now, Jake St. Roberts.
Yes. So give him kudos for changing his ways and mending fences. He obviously mend fence with Ultimate Warrior before his untimely passing. And Scott Hall does a situation like this. And I know people might say, well, maybe it's drugs or alcohol again. Well, there's just no excuse for this.
No, it doesn't matter. You're a celebrity. You're in a public forum. You do what's right for the people. You do what's right for the fans that made you all those millions and millions of dollars that allows you to have the lavish lifestyle you had of you know, being Razor Ramon and then being Scott Hall. NWO blew up because of the fans. People got to remember that it was the fans. This guy squandered away millions and millions of dollars on drugs and alcohol and all the stuff he was doing. It didn't have a dime to his name, and then people came back and people supported him. And you can't, you know, a kid that has brain cancer, you can't sign a damn card. I mean, I understand Bill Goldberg signed his card. A lot of people signed his card. And you can't sign the card. You're too good to sign a card for a kid that's terminally ill. I'm with you, Steve. A lot of lost respect for Scott Hall today. And, you know, it's just how it is. I was going to buy one of those T-shirts that say Click that he's selling out there at WrestlingTees.com, but I don't think I'm going to be getting one of those anytime soon until there is some way that he fixes the situation.
Now, you mentioned Goldberg. I believe Goldberg was one I saw was – somebody sent a direct tweet to him saying, you know, is this story true? Is it not true? And as far as I know, he's not replied to that tweet, which implies that it's probably true, unfortunately.
I would doubt it. I mean, why would people lie?
Exactly.
Everybody's saying the same thing. Nobody, you know, usually, you know, you'll have Sean Waltman come up and say, oh, that's not true, you know, blah, 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 Kevin Nash, but nobody's coming to the defense of Scott Hall in this one.
Because you can't.
Yep.
How could you possibly defend a situation like this?
Yep.
Well, you mentioned the name Raven, and, of course, that's been a hot topic on Gerwig.net the last, couple of days now. There was a article or a blog written by Jay, one of our former contributors, and he was reliving a time where he had a situation with Raven. He had a T-shirt, a Gerwig.net T-shirt, and he wanted to give it to Raven, and Raven basically blew him off. Didn't even remember Gerwig.net or never heard of it. And he wrote a blog that he would not vote, you know, he'd adamantly vote against Raven getting into the Gerwig.net Hall of Fame. Now, of course, at Gerwig.net, we want you to stand on your own merits. Does your wrestling career belong in a Hall of Fame? I guess the notable exception to this rule is Chris Benoit. Now, certainly Chris Benoit had a Hall of Fame wrestling career, but I can't put him in my Hall of Fame based on what happened with Chris Benoit.
Right.
But obviously Raven is a different situation. And, you know, when that blog went up, that Facebook posting went up, Raven was about 72-73% positive for the Hall of Fame. And at Gerwig.net, it's 70%. You need 70% or higher to be inducted into my Hall of Fame. It's a pretty high threshold, but I want the best of the best in my Hall of Fame. I don't want guys who are very questionable to get in the Hall of Fame. I don't want anybody to get in. So Raven this month is in August. We already got, as of this recording, is over 2,000 votes. And last I saw it was 60%, 67% now is yes. So two-thirds are still saying yes for the Hall of Fame. I know, Frankie, this when you read this blog, it kind of upset you and that you said that you would vote against Raven. I guess on its own merits, as you look at Raven's career, ECW champion, of course, was in WWF, WCW with the Flock. Is Raven a borderline Hall of Fame candidate? Is he a no-brainer? Is he not a Hall of Famer? How do you envision Raven when we look at his career?
I envision it like this. I look at his career when he was in WCW the first time around, back in the early 90s, up until the point where he became Johnny Polo in WWF, up until the point where he became the Raven in ECW, and then left the promotion to go to WCW, and going back to ECW, then going to the WWE, and then finally, you know, TNA and everything else he's done. I would say he's borderline on there because he's had a career in which he only held a world championship in ECW. So like, it's not like he held the championship in the WWE. So he's borderline there. Raven was a good promo. I'll give him that. But you know what? When you come out and you say that you don't know Gerwig.net, you don't know the website, you've never heard of it, when a former correspondent, you know, a former contributor from years ago interviewed the guy, and the guy was a piece of crap then because he did the interview for 10 minutes inside of a grocery store while he was shopping. So I'm voting no simply based off the you know, not so much of the merits of his career, but just personally how the guy is. For a guy to come out and say that the guy is, you know, all of us are you know, are marks, and you give him something, he's just going to trash it. I have no respect for that. That guy is not a person I would put in any Hall of Fame. So that's just that's how I feel. People can do whatever they want to. People can vote yes. They want to put Raven in the correct guy in Hall of Fame. They can put him here. You can put him there. You can vote however you want. My feeling is that the guy is disrespectful. He doesn't appreciate the success that the fans, once again, we're talking today about fans, like me, like you, have given this guy, the opportunity that this guy has had because of people like me. Okay, so I have no respect for Raven. I got no respect for the guy, and you know, I'm voting no.
And you can vote, and I definitely encourage you to go to Gerwig.net, vote. Should Raven be inducted into the Gerwig.net Hall of Fame? And I should say the blog that was written by Jay, our former contributor, is Jay's comments. It's Jay's viewpoint. You know, Frank D remembers, you know, the situation we had with the hotline back in the day. And it was true that Raven did an interview by phone with Michael T on the old Gerwig Report hotline from a supermarket. He was basically walking from aisle to aisle in a supermarket doing an interview with us. So that's all true, but I want you guys to decide if Raven should be in the Hall of Fame. You can vote right now. As I said, we already got 2,000 votes already, and it's only the fourth. But I definitely think that Raven's a borderline case, and the views expressed by Jay are Jay's comments. And you can agree with them, you can disagree with them, etc. And I saw there was a number of comments, people saying, you know, Gerwig.net is, the Hall of Fame is excluded from politics, that he should stand on his own merits. And, of course, somebody did bring up Chris Benoit. And I think Chris Benoit is going to be my exception to the rule because of what Chris Benoit turned into, what happened to his life. And to me, Frank, by putting Chris Benoit in the Hall of Fame would be to put the man itself on a pedestal. And I made the editorial decision. You know, he was on a ballot years ago. He got 64%. And it certainly, you know, with my rule at Gerwig.net, if you don't make it in, you can be on the ballot the next year. You get 12 months off the ballot. And I just made the decision that I'm not going to put Chris Benoit back on the ballot just because I don't want to acknowledge the guy's his life, what happened. I can't sit here with a straight face and think about Nancy Benoit and Daniel Benoit and Nancy's parents that went through what they went through, Nancy's sister, and for me to glorify a wrestling career at the expense of their family, I can't do it. And I think that's the only exception when I talk about standing on your own merits as a wrestling career. I just can't put Chris Benoit in, period. I definitely agree that Chris Benoit had a Hall of Fame career, but I'm not going to put in my Hall of Fame. And I think we're justified making that call.
Yeah, it's not political. It's obvious.
WWE is not going to do it. We're not going to do it.
Yep.
I know he's in the Observer Hall of Fame, and Observer actually had a special election to remove him from the Hall of Fame, and he didn't get enough votes to be voted out. So he's actually still in Dave Meltzer's Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. But again, you make the call. These are just Jay's viewpoints, Frank D's viewpoints. As I said, I've been on the borderline on Raven since we put him on the ballot. You certainly can make a case for him. ECW champion, Raven's Flock was a very good group in WCW. People always say he's one of the most creative guys, has a great mind for the business. But then again, you could say, well, he only really made it on a big scale in ECW as a champion. You talked about his WWF career. Again, I think he's borderline, and we'll let the fans decide. I think it's going to be all month long, Frank. It's going to go back and forth. I think we'll just have to wait to the final results. If you made a prediction now, do you think he's going to get in?
Probably. You know, I don't know, man. It's really half and half right now. I think we've got to give it a little bit more time. I think a lot of people out there who are listening to the podcast right now probably need to go read that story. I think you make your decisions from there.
Yeah. So that's what we'll say about Raven. Again, he's up this month for election at Gerwig.net for the Hall of Fame. So vote yay or nay at Gerwig.net. Also want to mention a couple other tidbits here of news before we get to Ravon's question. I want to get into this because he's gotten a lot of flack for this. But Jesse Ventura won a defamation lawsuit against the widow of a Navy SEAL who claimed that Jesse Ventura essentially said that he was happy that Navy SEALs were dying in the war and that he punched out Ventura in a bar. Well, Ventura took offense to this, and he filed a lawsuit against the widow. Now, what happened was the person that wrote the book, the other ex-Navy SEAL, that made all these claims, died, Frank, was, it was an accident that he got knocked off. So he was gone, out of the picture. So Jesse, the only way he can get his reputation back or protect his reputation is to sue the widow of this ex-Navy SEAL. Now, he's gotten a lot of flack from the media to say, how can Jesse Ventura go after a widow of an ex-Navy SEAL? But it was the only way, as I said, he can protect his reputation. Now, with Jesse, it's not about the money. Jesse's got millions of dollars. But he took great offense to have somebody claim that he was happy that Navy SEALs died and that he got beat up in a bar by another Navy SEAL. So, Frank, I know he's gotten a lot of flack for this, but I think he's totally justified in this case. It's not about the money. It's about his reputation, and I think by winning this lawsuit that he should get his reputation back if it was damaged at all, that he's a proud Navy SEAL, and he would never wish Navy SEALs or be happy that Navy SEALs died. How pathetic of a claim that would be from another Navy SEAL.
Yeah, and the only way that he's going to recoup any of his reputation is to sue, you know, whether the guy is dead or alive. If the guy was alive, the same thing would have happened.
Right, he would have filed a lawsuit against this guy.
Exactly, filed a suit for slander and defamation of character. That's what we do. Right. That's what the law is there for. So it doesn't matter if somebody is dead or it doesn't matter if somebody is alive. If somebody does something to wrong you, you take them to a court of law, and the law goes for itself.
Yeah, he got $1.8 million. Remember the O.J. case? Remember O.J. was found – O.J. Simpson was found not guilty. Sure. Yet the Goldman family sued – O.J. Simpson, wrongful death lawsuit. They won millions of dollars. You know how much they got from that lawsuit?
Probably zero.
Zero. So who's to say Jesse Ventura is going to receive a dime from the settlement? And remember, Jesse Ventura has also paid legal fees and a lawyer. They waited. They knew Jesse Ventura 6 months out of the year in Mexico. They waited until he crossed the Mexican border for this story to go out that he was happy that Navy SEALs had died, that he was going to go to Mexico. When he's in Mexico, he doesn't have any internet. He doesn't have any television service. They knew that him driving to Mexico, it would take him probably days to realize what was going on, and that when he found out, he was inflamed. And I just think it's so asinine for the media out there to say, well, how can Jesse Ventura go after the widow? When all in likeliness, he probably is not going to receive a dime from the widow. And it was the only way for the guy to get his reputation back or protect his reputation from these claims that he was proud that Navy SEALs had passed away. I just wanted to mention that because I know in the mainstream media he's gotten a lot of flack. And you know what, Frank? I'm a little disappointed in the wrestling media because I saw some wrestling media cover it. You know, they put up that Jesse Ventura won this case. But when I put up anything Jesse Ventura related in terms of his political views, his comments, that people are saying, why you talk about Jesse Ventura? He's a whack job. He's an old, out-of-touch guy. And anything, you know, Kelly does something. She does a photo shoot. People are going to publicize it. Anybody wrestling related does anything outside of wrestling related, it gets reported. Yet, if I report that Jesse Ventura is talking about gun control, or Jesse Ventura is talking about Obamacare, that somehow I get demonized that I'm a nut for covering Jesse Ventura, when at the end of the day I'm a wrestling website, and what he has to say is relevant because he is a former wrestling figure. And because some people don't agree with his viewpoints, and other wrestling websites who don't want to touch Jesse Ventura because they probably don't agree with his viewpoints either, that some days I feel like I'm the only wrestling media out there that's even covering Jesse Ventura, which is pitiful from a wrestling perspective. That other wrestling websites should cover Jesse Ventura because he's a former wrestling figure and the guy's relevant.
Yep, totally agree.
I want to mention Hulk Hogan, Frank. Hulk Hogan basically did an interview. Remember, Hulk Hogan's daughter, Brooke, was engaged to a Dallas Cowboy, and they broke off their engagement. They never actually got married, and Hogan did an interview where he said that he wasn't down with this guy. He didn't think he walked the walk and talked the talk, and he basically nixed that engagement. I don't know, Frank. I can understand you may not like the guy your daughter's dating, but at the end of the day, it's your daughter's call who she's going to marry, and I just couldn't believe. I guess I could believe. I mean, this is – the Hogan family is the family that the mama, Linda Hogan – is dating a 19-year-old. Now she's being sued by this 19-year-old.
Right.
You know the situation with Nick Hogan got in an accident and basically a paraplegic, another military veteran. We know what happened with Brooke Hogan and the TV shows, and her singing career has gone nowhere. Daddy Hogan, who did the Hogan Knows Best series, I guess really it should be no surprise to me that Hogan went on an interview and basically said that he nixed his daughter's plan to marry a Dallas Cowboy.
Hey. Hogan knows best and Slava knows best, right? If Hogan gets a bad vibe, then that's what he's going to do. But you know, I would take that with a grain of salt. Am I going to take anything Hogan says with a grain of salt? I mean, he once said that when he press slammed Andre, Andre was 700 pounds. So I take anything the man says with a grain of salt.
You know, and going back to that interview, he said, you know, referring to this guy here, he said, but you know what? He knew better than to step up because he would have gotten slammed just like Andre the Giant. So it seems like whenever Hogan does an interview, it always goes back to Andre the Giant. And by the way, Frank, I think Andre the Giant now weighed 2,000 pounds at WrestleMania.
Could be. I know they have to reinforce the ring specifically for this match. That's what Gorilla Monsoon used to say. So, yeah.
And then another Hogan note, he actually said he's actually training to do one more match, and he wouldn't mind stepping in the ring with John Cena.
Well, I'd like $1 billion, but it ain't going to happen.
So you don't want to see, as you would say, Grandpa Huckster step back in the ring and have one more match?
I don't want to see Hogan go out there and embarrass himself and his hip pop out of his leg.
Which is entirely possible.
Yep.
I want to give a mention to Ring of Honor. Had a great episode, Frank. You believe I watched Ring of Honor and it was all about wrestling?
No.
Yeah, a whole hour with one match. It was a Golden Gauntlet where you had, I believe, what, six individuals compete for a title shot at the Ring of Honor heavyweight champion, Michael Elgin. The whole hour of the show was dedicated to this match. And it was great wrestling. You know, I'm watching Raw, you know, on Hulu, where I'm seeing John Cena talk. I'm seeing Paul Heyman talk. I'm seeing Cesaro talk. I'm 17 minutes into the show, no wrestling. And the whole hour of Ring of Honor wrestling this week was all about this match. And the winner of the match would go on to receive a shot at the prestigious Ring of Honor Championship. And this reminded me back of the 80s, some of the Crockett shows you would see, or some of the Mid-South shows with Jim Ross, dedicated maybe to a whole show on one match. And really sold the match was very important. It's just, I mean, the match was all about wrestling. And so much to what we see today with WWE and TNA, Frank. Talk. And here's a wrestling show giving you...
Wrestling.
Go figure.
Right.
If you get a chance to see the hour of the Golden Gauntlet on Ring of Honor Wrestling, if it's in your market, or you can check it out on the ROHWrestling.com website on demand, definitely check that out. Really, really good. And, Frank, we got, as per usual, we got some questions from Ravon,
okay,
who gave us our weekly shout-out. And has two questions for us, as usual. Do you think if Bobby Lashley didn't leave WWE, do you think he would have went on to become a WWE champion?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we were just talking that a guy like The Miz is a former WWE champion.
Exactly. So I would think, I mean, Bobby, you know, he was going to be that guy. So, yeah, definitely he would have been WWE champion, absolutely.
And then the second question, and I agree with Frank's opinion there, definitely think he would have went on to be a WWE champion at some point. The second question is, is there legit heat between Bret Hart and Jerry the King Lawler?
I don't think there, there might have been some legit heat with them when Lawler first came over, but I don't think there's any legit heat with them now. I think Bret typically gets along with anybody if it's financially responsible for him. I mean, he gets along with Triple H, but he doesn't really care for Triple H.
I wonder why.
Exactly.
But he doesn't care about his opinion either.
I hear plenty of stories about how Bret was treated behind the scenes at WCW. I mean, how he was supposedly flying around with Hogan in Hogan's private jet and having a lot of conversations with Eric Bischoff that were non-wrestling, talking about Bret's, you know, Bischoff says that Bret's a real big history person, and he was teaching him about Canadian history, and all of a sudden now Bret hates him ever since Bret came back to WWE, so... I don't know. I don't think there was any heat there between the two now, but there might have been some back in the day, especially when Lawler first came up, because he stiffed Bret pretty good at that King of the Ring when Bret first won. I remember that post-match attack. It was good. So there might have been some heat there, but I don't think there's any now.
I agree, and I think if Bret can get along with Shawn Michaels now, he can get along with about anybody. So.
Yep.
Even Triple H, a guy doesn't respect his opinion. I want to also encourage fans out there and readers, listeners, to go to girlwick.net. And, of course, we are doing the Hot 100 Women of Wrestling. The first round is completed. Got some great matches coming up here in round two. Definitely check out Gerwick.net and vote on those matches, the matchups, and we're going to determine who is going to be deemed the hottest woman of all time in wrestling. And as I suspected, Frank, Miss Elizabeth did very well. She went up against Maryse, and she actually won. But somebody who didn't do real well, a surprise, was Nancy Benoit. And, you know, I put her in the tournament as woman, and you think maybe some people just don't remember woman, or maybe didn't appreciate her beauty back in the day.
Yeah, probably just, I don't know. It's probably a lot of people just don't know who she was or didn't see her work. It's not like with Junkyard Dog. Junkyard Dog didn't get in the Hall of Fame because I think a lot of people, you know, didn't realize how big of a star he was over in the Mid-South, and it just didn't translate into WWE or the last one he had in WCW. So it could be one of those factors.
Yeah, so we'll continue this tournament until we're one left. Some interesting matchups here in round two. We have Trish Stratus going up against Sherry Martel. Obviously a great woman from the past. SoCal Val against Taryn Terrell. I know Frank was disappointed that Eve Torres did not come out of the first round.
Yeah.
Stacy Keebler against Joy Giovanni. I was surprised Joy Giovanni did so well because, what, she was in WWE, what, like 6 months, if that?
Yeah, but she was hot, man. She was a lot. She was hot. Who did she go up against?
Rosa, Charmel, and Taylor Wilde.
Rosa, Charmel, and Taylor Wilde. Yeah. You know, you have like a drunk like Rosa Mendez up there. Yeah.
Yeah. Madeja. I guess people remember Madeja. She beat April Hunter in the first round.
Wow.
So that was interesting. Also, for the second round, we got Brooke Tessemacher against Sable. I think that will be interesting. Victoria. I know one of your favorites there. She's going to go up against Sunny in round number two.
Oh, you already know. I'm definitely going to go with Victoria. Once again, I don't like cokeheads, so.
We got Taylor Hendricks against Lacey Von Erich. I know that was one of your favorites, too, Lacey Von Erich.
Absolutely.
She might go pretty far. AJ Lee defeated Stephanie McMahon in round one, and now she's going to go up against Kelly Kelly, who just announced her engagement.
Wow.
Elizabeth in round number two goes up against Gail Kim. That should be interesting.
Yeah. Gail Kim Irvine.
Maria Canales go against Sarah Stock. Sarita and TNA. That should be interesting as well. So
yeah.
Continue to vote at Gerwick.net, and we always appreciate your support at the Gerwick Report podcast and Gerwick.net. We kind of be accessible to you. Any comments you might have for us, we're at the Gerwick Report on Twitter. My handle is just Gerwick. I'm also Steve Gerwick, the anti-NWO Twitter feed, if you want to check me out there. Frank D., go ahead and plug your Twitter.
Yeah, simply Real Frank D-E-E at Twitter. And pretty much when anything starts popping off on there, I usually have a comment about it.
Really? I hadn't noticed.
Yeah, feel free to check me out and all that. I guarantee you, if you see Frank D one day out in the streets and you take a picture with me, I won't call you a pig. So.
All right, Frank D, I enjoy talking to you. I'm looking forward to the next edition of the Gerwick Report podcast.
I always enjoy it. I look forward to it. And hopefully, you know, we'll have something interesting to talk about. It is Monday. Tonight is Monday Night Boar. Don't forget.
Yeah, so if you're not going to watch it or looking for something to do, go to Gerwick.net. Live coverage of the show, and definitely vote on the polls. Always appreciate your support at Gerwick.net, www.gerwek.net.